This is an AMI podcast.
I'm Kelly McDonald.
I'm Ramya Amadhin, and this is Kelly and Ramya.
Live from the Accessible Media Studios, this is Kelly and Ramya. Entertainment, lifestyle, and great conversation. It's AMI's on-air community, and everyone's invited.
You know, we have so much fun settling back, and a lot of time, Kelly McDonald here with Ramya Amadhin, my co-host, people will say, what's it like doing 2 hours of sitting there, talking to people, being on like that all the time? Ramya, I think the easy answer for us, the standard answer is, it's like going to class. We settle in, we learn so much over those 2 hours, as hopefully you do, and we get to be class clowns.
Oh, somebody gets to be class clown for sure. Do you take notes, Kels, throughout the show?
As to what our guests say sometimes, especially if we're going to talk about something on Cut for Time on Fridays, or if it's something I didn't know, I'll go back afterward and cut it out of the script and say, I could use this for information somewhere or an interesting fact. But most stuff, I'm one of those heads that just keeps a lot of those stats in my head or may find them interesting to just kind of reference later and just use the excuse of, I heard this somewhere, I'm not sure I have it quite right, but yeah. Just for topical, right?
Well, that's lucky. I can't keep anything in my head. So if I don't take notes today, then it's out by the end of the show. Out of mind, I mean. But I do think it's gotten a little harder with TV to take notes because people will be wondering, what is she doing? But yes, I love taking notes.
Does it feel to you the way our show has been, and again, we did this show, ladies and gentlemen, as an audio program for 6 years. Do you... when sitting here, feel like you're just learning so much that you pick up when you think back to school? You, of course, going to school a little more recent than I.
The question is,
do you feel like you're in class, like we joke and say?
Yeah, of course. But it's more like not school class, more like the classes that I would go to because I chose the electives.
Right.
You know what I mean?
So the ones you went to for fun, all the topics were, I'm interested in that. Let's get someone here to talk about it. Awesome. That's good, though. Nothing wrong with that. That's the best way to soak stuff up and make it stay up in our head. Speaking of that, let's preview what we've got going on the program today. Greg David's going to join us in a little while. He's going to give us a preview of some special awards being handed out at this year's Canadian Screen Awards.
We have a familiar voice on the network joining us with some big news. Krista Couture is talking about the CBC Art original, How to Lose Everything. And this is streaming beginning this Friday on CBC Gem, so we want to find out more about it.
Many new jobs are in the gig economy. What does this mean, actually? Kevin Shaw stopped by to explain during his entrepreneurship segment with us later on in hour two here on Kelly and Ramya. So, a newly released document shows Ottawa feels it lacks a willing partner to find a way to introduce fire codes on First Nation reserves, including the Assembly of First Nations.
Unlike the rest of Canada, building and fire codes don't apply on First Nations. Experts warn that contributes to the high number of deadly house fires on reserve. Indigenous Services Minister Patty Hyde says she's open to all options, but an internal document shows federal officials don't believe they have the support of the AFN to introduce new legislation or regulation. The organization hasn't responded to a request for comment, but Blaine Wiggins, senior director of the Indigenous Fire Marshal Service, says in the meantime, the federal government must act. Stephanie Taylor, The Canadian Press, Ottawa.
Absolutely phenomenal discussion that has to happen, has to get sorted out because we're losing too many people to fire, whether it's scattered well throughout the country. And again, this is something when you talk about codes in cities that have been addressed, that have to be adhered to, and you're saying it's a little more difficult out here and in the countryside and in these locations. No, it's a fact. It's something that has to be done, and it really cannot. It cannot be held off any further on the First Nation reserves, Ramya. This is, when I heard this, absolutely shocking. But unfortunately, you say, not surprising, because it's just one of those things that seems to be, we'll take care of that. Uh-huh. Well, the next administration will.
slips through the cracks, prioritizing other things. Something bigger is always around, you know, throw in whatever excuse you will. But really, the word equity comes to mind here because just because, you know, some people are located in bigger cities or in more prominent areas of the country, whatever that means, doesn't mean, or, you know, more populated areas, doesn't mean that the people who aren't in those priority areas deserve to have to deal with exactly. such terrible circumstances. And it's very unfortunate that we can tell so clearly the lines that are being drawn between people who are, you know, prioritized, people who are important, and other parts of society that aren't.
People shouldn't have to live in such fear or jeopardy like that. I want to squeeze one more thing in, ladies and gentlemen. Ramya wanted to talk about this yesterday, about a remarkable rescue that was caught on camera after a diver was pulled away by the current off the Florida Keys, lost for hours at sea. And the hero in this story, the heroes in this story, are his own family.
A family cheering, relieved after spotting 22-year-old Dylan Gartenmeyer. The experienced diver was pulled by a rip current off Key West, missing for more than 3 hours as the Coast Guard searched from the surface and the air.
As I had seen the sun disappear, I knew things were starting to get a little more dire at that time. I had just seen a reef shark swim past me.
Dylan using a piece of bamboo to stay afloat, then building a raft out of buoys, hearing the search efforts with no way to say where he was before seeing it was his grandfather's boat coming to his rescue. Lionel Moyes, ABC News.
Yesterday you wanted to cover this off, so I wanted to slip it in today because what a story. Certainly wouldn't want to be out in that water, that's for sure, for that amount of time and being on the search and thinking, gosh, light's going, we're in trouble here. Something else. Great pick yesterday, Ramya. Glad we were able to fit it in today on the show. We're going to step aside for a moment, and coming up next, we bring in reporter Grant Hardy, who's going to be talking the latest health, lifestyle, and accessibility right here on the show. Stay tuned.
Don't miss a minute. Kelly and Ramya will be right back.
Welcome back to the program. Settling in for a couple of hours of entertainment and information. We'll get to Grant Hardy in just a couple of moments, but I'm Kelly McDonald with Ramya Moothan. I'm in the London, Ontario home studio today wearing a black sweater over a green two-button shirt and, of course, the fedora hanging out on top. And Ramya, you're at the studio on main campus in Toronto.
Hello, yes I am. And similar set, sitting behind a white table with the Toronto skyline behind me and the purple and white lit pillars. I'm also wearing a crisp, if I do say so myself, button-up white shirt today.
Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you for, of course, riding along wherever you are, folks, out there listening in around the world to the program or watching us over on AMI TV, all sorts of ways to check us out. We'll get into that as we walk our way through the program. But right now, let's bring in reporter Grant Hardy, who's going to join us from Vancouver. He's going to be talking the latest health, lifestyle, and accessibility.
Hey, I'm Grant Hardy, and welcome to the Headlines segment. I tackle everything from health and lifestyle to accessibility and tech. I have it all right here on Kelly and Ramya.
Grant, welcome back, pal. Hope you're doing all right. Appreciate having you, of course, on board. Happy Wednesday.
That intro makes this sound so deep. I feel like I have to kind of live up to tackling.
We'll see, we have him there, but
we'll figure that out. I'm still stuck to the old schedule where Wednesdays meant health with Grant. So I'm bracing myself for like serious health stories. Yeah.
Well,
now we're kind of over.
Yeah, blanket. There he is. I think I hear him there now. There we are, Grant.
There we go.
Hello, sir. How are you?
The connection may not be so healthy, but...
Uh-oh.
That's all right.
But that's the lifestyle you're living in.
Exactly. There you go.
Welcome, sir. What do you have for us today?
Right.
Welcome back.
So wouldn't it be cool if there was one thing you could do to help your brain and your cognition? Well, it turns out that a new study attempts to answer that question. And what they did was they strapped activity monitors to the thighs of nearly 45 people in the United Kingdom to track their movements for 24 hours. I'm very sorry to say that sitting on the couch, eating popcorn, and watching TV is not the best way to improve cognition. Turns out people who spend even small amounts of time in more vigorous activities, as little as 6 to 9 minutes, compared to sitting, sleeping, or gentle activities, had higher cognition scores, the authors said. Moderate physical activity is typically defined as brisk walking or bicycling or running, up and down stairs, vigorous movement such as aerobic dancing, jogging, running, swimming, and biking up a hill will boost your heart rate and breathing. The study published this week in the Journal of Epidemiology and Community Health found doing just under 10 minutes of moderate to vigorous exertion each day improved study participants' working memory, but it had its biggest impact on executive processes such as planning and organization. The cognitive improvement was modest, but as additional time was spent doing the more energetic workout, the benefits grew. Wow. So this is kind of cool because I feel like we've all been told to sort of exercise for what, about half an hour a day, I think is the sort of going rate. But I feel like, you know, 8 to 10 minutes, even if it's just running up and down the fire escape stairs or something like that, that should be easy enough to work into your sort of to-do list. I kind of feel like some people, you know, find exercising pleasurable and it just comes naturally. And for others, it kind of has to be something that you just sort of get through and you add to your to-do list. But it's really cool to know that there are benefits, especially with executive function and organization, which I must admit I kind of struggle with.
Probably when you say to-do list is where I'm going, like, I don't want to do it. I have so much on my to-do list already. Don't add
it. I thought you meant you don't want to use the to-do list. There you go. That's not that helping too. Me remember things.
But it's
that's
true. The working it for in me. Part is probably the hardest in terms of sticking with it. I can work it in today. I can work it in tomorrow because it's fresh, it's new, and we just talked about it. But then what happens after that? So the daily is what I find hard, especially with vigorous, right? Like you can put in a walk a day or put in, you know, winter activities or seasonal activities for the time of the year and do that once in a while, once a week, twice a week. But every day to carve out that time is, I find, more difficult than it seems.
Yeah, and yeah, we're just talking, sense. Grant, with this more for blowing out your brain, like you're clearing it out, getting the cobwebs out, so that it runs right a little bit better, as opposed to the exercise thing for your heart, lungs, and everything else, and overall fitness. It's an interesting study. I can kind of see that. I can see the link. But that 8 or 9, I don't even know how you quantify those minutes and translate that to the higher ladder of making those executive decisions. I guess it does come down to clarity, not being so sluggish. Some of us would say, I always say I'm kind of feeling dopey if I'm not sleepy, but just kind of dopey, just the mind slower. And I guess that kind of thing, getting that extra, it blows out the cobwebs.
Isn't that the interesting part, though, that the physical activity is what helps you clarify your brain?
I think it's really fascinating. I think we not really knowing what the flow of our blood, the movement, the speed of it,
the hormone
amount
releases,
of it, moving through exactly all the things that happen based on, and there's probably other things that do the same thing, whether it's our olfactor, you know, certain smells will say, oh, that refreshes me or makes me feel eating certain foods. If you eat more vegetables, you just feel cleaner sometimes, like than opposed to some of the things, eating a lot of bread or meat. And we can easily say, well, that's going to make you more sluggish. It's heavier. Yeah, but there's a certain feel sometimes. If I have enough vegetables, there's a feeling I can't explain. And maybe I'm not enough of a vegetable eater. Maybe that's it. But I think I do okay.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. It's a cool study and hopefully should motivate me to do some exercise. So I just wanted to touch on this since it's related to health as well, just chatting about mental health here for a second. So, you know, 3 years after the emergence of COVID-19, Canadians continue to feel the impact of the pandemic on their mental health. They report high levels of mental distress as they endure ongoing challenges like periods of isolation, difficulties with relationships, and working remotely or on the front lines. But despite the high numbers of people needing support, many cannot find access to mental health services. Mm-hmm. Mental health is best treated by talk therapy, a group program, by peer supports, or a substance use program. But none of that is covered through our Canada Health Act. Therapy from a psychiatrist or a psychologist or social worker is covered by provincial health plans as long as the service is offered at a government-funded hospital, clinic, or agency. But it can tend to take weeks or months to get a referral, and that can even lead to situations like a police response to an incident or needing to use like an addiction facility. And the article is saying that if Canada invested in mental health coverage, the funding would help all Canadians alleviate pressure on both people accessing care and those providing it. Definitely goes to what we've talked about numerous times here, where our healthcare system and our country, quite frankly, seems to be very reactive. Where
that's it.
If you need a police response, they'll send you the big response. But if it's like, look, I'm trying to get my life back on track here to prevent, and you know, not making any allowances for people doing terrible things. But look, I want to, you know, get my life back on track here. Yeah, that we're not so good at doing. And I'm curious why. Do you guys have any thoughts on that article or why it might be that we're so stubborn to address mental health issues?
Well, you know, Grant, with it being Bell Let's Talk Day, and we're doing a lot of conversations, we're seeing them on social media on this particular day. But, you know, again, every day we know sometimes all of us, we have our moments, we feel different ways. But I've really, Ramya, heard it in Grant's remark of, we are such a reactive country. We think of Canada so forward-thinking. We talk a lot about the things we know. We know today, get on social media, support people and stuff. But as you said, Grant, it's like we do things once the horse is out of the barn. Oh, yeah, should have locked the door then. Instead of being there ahead of time to support, to help, and not, you know, individually, but as a collective, our government, and I don't know if it's the country size, I don't know if it's we talk a big game. I feel sometimes we're so worried about the financial burden of resources. Can we really afford that? Do we have to? Well, we really should. Oh, it's so painful to our country.
And you can see that it's very prevalent in the patterns that are already existing, right? So where the mental health supports are actually available in hospitals, in government-funded places and locations. But the problem is, if we're using those mental health supports, chances are we've gone through some kind of traumatic experience or are going through something, you know, pretty drastic at the moment. And it's not necessarily the everyday, you know, I want to keep track of my mental health. I want the support in this area of my life. That stuff is just not available. It's not known enough. And it could be a fleeting thought, right? Like you or I could say, I want to start seeing a therapist regularly. But where do you go from there? Mm-hmm. Those supports alone are not available.
Well, and we know certain times of the year, we've talked about, you know, SADS on the program, and we know, for example, this time of the year, what a time as Christmas has gone. There's a lot of different things people are dealing with, things that come up. And we know, okay, let's talk about it. And talking is beautiful. But our action always looks and says, if we had more of, and again, it comes back to me, Grant, feeling, and this is just my opinion, we have to have that push. When the pandemic hit, well, let's get the masks out. Oh, masks. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we threw all those out because they were old and sitting around, and no one felt it was necessary to replace them in case of a pandemic.
Yeah. I find it so interesting, you know, where people turn to for help. And if you look on forums, you know, Reddit, you know, relationship help or you know, mental health forums where people are like asking for help for their like deepest, darkest secrets from strangers, you know, and sometimes the advice that you get back is like pretty horrible and can probably really mess people up. And you're like, if you could just maybe get in to see a professional, if we didn't make it so hard, maybe it would be easier.
And you wouldn't turn to social media for all of these.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's interesting because our money, I feel like, should be invested back into our people and our resources to make our country 110% the best that we can.
Yeah.
And we don't always do that.
Well, and we also know that when we want help, any of us, it often is a fleeting moment. And that moment is that moment where we might actually do something. We're ready to react. And if there's anything that gets in the way that makes us hesitate, sometimes that fleeting moment is gone. And that is the nature of, but if you don't put obstacles and you make things readily available, you know, at least more people are going to have access and seek that support that they
need. Something there when you need it, right?
Yeah, without you having to, well, here's a hoop. And can you answer these questions first before we put you through to the person that you need to talk to? Wonderful stuff, Grant.
All right. I don't know about wonderful, but at least topical. Thanks, guys, for having me on.
Very much. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you later in the week. Grant Hardy will join us on day two to talk about headlines, but he'll be back for What in the World tomorrow on the program as well. We call that the trending headlines segment, so we can cover a whole bunch of things. Ramya, we're going to step aside for a couple of moments. Greg David, he's going to be here shortly to talk about some special awards that are being handed out at this year's Canadian Screen Awards. So stick around. We'll get into that conversation in 2 minutes. This week over on AMI Audio, the Neutral Zone gang, folks. The panel discusses the divisional round in the NFL playoffs and previews the AFC and NFC championship games. The Neutral Zone, if you want to catch it, it's on Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern time. It's also, I know you're saying, hey, did I miss it then? What's the point? No, point is the podcast, folks. You can always download that, and you can always find them available to you as a YouTube podcast. So we say, check it all out. Get yourselves ready for your football weekend with the gang over there at the Neutral Zone, available from AMI Audio Podcasts. Kelly McDonald here with Ramya Muthan.
Every other week on Wednesdays, we talk television with our communication specialist here at AMI, Greg David.
I'm Greg David, and I love TV. Join me on Kelly and Ramya, where we talk about the biggest hits, misses, and trends in television and entertainment.
Greg, we discuss everything and anything entertaining on this segment, and usually it's the latest in TV news, and that's great because the Canadian Screen Awards are up. It's kind of like the Oscars and Primetime Emmys all roll into one, and they're coming this spring. You've got a heads up for us on a lot of the content that's about to come on there. So let's get to the preview, specifically about some special awards being handed out this time around. So before we get into the special awards, though, and who's going to be receiving all that, can you refresh our memories on what the Canadian Screen Awards are?
And Time Emmys all rolled into one because it's the best of Canadian television, but also the best of Canadian film. And the Canadian Screen Awards, or the CSAs, are given out by the Academy of Canadian Cinema and Television. And they're the largest nonprofit professional media arts organization in Canada. They've got a membership of more than 4,000 emerging and established industry professionals. And the group is dedicated to developing, recognizing, celebrating, and advocating for Canadian talent in the film, television, and digital media sectors.
Ooh, that's
a little bit of a Yeah, that's a little bit of a crib sheet on what the Academy and the CSAs are all about.
When does the gala actually air, Greg?
Yeah, so there's a week of programming in April that leads up to the special gala, and we'll all be able to check out the event on CBC, CBC Gem, and the CBC YouTube channel on Sunday, April the 16th at 8 p.m. And don't worry, we'll be talking about the Canadian Screen Awards before that actual date, so you don't need to write that down in your calendars quite yet, but they are happening on Sunday, April the 16th.
Okay, so let's actually get into the special awards that are being given out. And there are some big names being featured, not only in Canada, but around the world. So begin with Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. You may have heard of Ryan Reynolds. He's on our screens everywhere right now. And he is receiving the Humanitarian Award. And this is given out in recognition of an extraordinary humanitarian contribution or act of compassion by a professional working in the Canadian media industry in the prior year. And Ryan Reynolds is one of those people who has shown a dedication to philanthropy throughout his career. He's made generous donations to charities such as Canada's Water First Education and Training Incorporated and the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. And that's in an effort to support displaced families from Ukraine. He holds an annual aesthetically challenged sweater holiday campaign that you may have seen because the videos with Hugh Jackman are hilarious. And that, yes. I didn't
the
even know
title's
notice.
Hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Aesthetically challenged in quotes. And this helps raise money for the Hospital for Sick Children in Toronto, which I didn't know. I just knew that it was an opportunity to make fun of Hugh Jackman. But it turns out that there's money going to the Hospital for Sick Children. And not only that, but Ryan's also made major contributions to the industry outside of his performances. He's the co-founder of two different organizations aiming to offer underrepresented communities more access to creative careers and he does that through a group called the Group Effort Initiative and also Creative Ladder. And that's not even talking about the special gin that he's created. So a guy that does a lot, but gives a heck of a lot back to the community for sure.
Yeah. You know what? You've seen so much making time for people, even that individual out there doing something. And mostly, Greg, anytime I see him, anytime he's doing something like that, there seems to be that own personal reward of joy. So definitely, he is very, very deserving. He is so much more than that gifted actor.
Yeah, and I just wanted to say, the other thing is he's never really forgotten his roots. You know, he always make a point of mentioning Canada when he was given, it was a Canada's Walk of Fame or Order of Canada last year when Stephen Page sung a lovely song to him. He was, legitimately choked up that he was being recognized by his home country. So he certainly hasn't forgotten us.
No, and gets involved in lots of things and opinions over here in Canada. So beyond, being a great actor, he's quite funny. But speaking of funny people, Catherine O'Hara, she's also receiving a special award, too. Give us some details on this one.
Yeah, absolutely. Another great funny person. So Catherine O'Hara is the recipient of the Academy Icon Award. And this is presented to a Canadian individual or institution for their exceptional, ongoing contribution to the media industry at home or abroad. She, of course, is a prolific multi-award-winning actress, writer, and comedian whose film credits include lead and supporting roles in Schitt's Creek, Beetlejuice, Home Alone, Home Alone 2, I mean, SCTV, After Hours, Heartburn, Where the Wild Things Are, Nightmare Before Christmas. I mean, she's become an institution. When you look at Catherine O'Hara, throughout her career, she's been on tons of television shows and iconic movies that we all will remember from our childhoods and our adulthoods as well.
So another well-deserving one, you believe?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, there isn't anybody in this list that I'm talking about today where I would say, nah, let's not give them an award. No, they're all equally deserving.
Oh, very well deserving. Yes. Yeah. And I love the backgrounds, too, not just about the awards that they're getting and why that, but, just in general, what they're up to, how good they are, et cetera. So lovely.
Yeah, and it's nice to have you boasting for them, Greg, as opposed to, because it's got to be hard for these people, their representation to go out. You know what Catherine's doing? It's wonderful when you hear it spoke of and you're sitting here like we are saying, wow, I didn't know.
Well, yeah, and that was why I wanted to talk about this, because all of the times that I watch the Canadian Screen Awards and I see these awards handed out, I've never really looked down deep into the reasoning behind them being nominated or being given these awards. I didn't know the history of all these awards, so that's why I thought it would be fun to share it with the two of you and our audience today.
It is. So let's keep going down the list. Tracy Moore is another well-known name here in Toronto as the host of City TV's City Line. She's about to get some great recognition. Is it global, I guess? Yeah. National recognition from the CSAs thanks to the James Baker Award. So tell us more about this one.
Yeah, it's actually the Changemaker Award.
Oh, I lied.
And that's all right. That's all right.
Well, who's James Baker anyway?
You're giving her other awards. No problem.
You're making one up for them.
Yeah, this is a second award that they now have to give because we said it on national TV. Okay, go ahead.
So the Changemaker Award recognizes and honors those in the media community in Canada who are using their voice or platform to call out systemic racism and discrimination. They support and amplify the voices of those who are actively engaged in anti-racist work, and they seek structural transformations in media, film, and television in Canada that promote values of equality and inclusion. And Tracy certainly does that. She's done that through her work as the host of City Line, the City Line Real on Race YouTube series and podcast that came out in the last couple of years. She's also the co-producer and co-host of City TV's RTNDA award-winning race special, Ending Racism, What Will It Take? And she's also made a commitment to supporting young women and children with City Line's very first scholarship for Black, Indigenous, and persons of color women in that group, and was recently named a Trust 15 ambassador. So, you know, whether you watch her on City Line, you know, whereas I'm more familiar with, she's doing equally important stuff behind the scenes as well. And this is going to be a well-deserved award for Tracy Moore.
What powerful conversations she's involving herself in.
Yeah, she had an episode of City Line where it was all the makeup. Nobody had makeup on the show, and she came on taking the makeup off. And I mean, there's a look, you know, there's just an example of things she's doing. Like, forget it. We can do shows without makeup on. This is what I really look like. And so, yeah, she's just groundbreaking in so many fantastic ways.
I love it.
Yeah, and having that, these folks that you're showing us, Greg, that we're talking about are doing so many things off camera, around, in feeding into so many different things, because they're taking what knowledge, skill they have and sharing it and making change, like you say, behind the scenes where attitudes change. And again, we ran into some of this with news broadcaster Lisa LaFlamme, who's been through a lot over the past year. She was let go from her long-running job at CTV News, which led to an internal investigation at Bell Media. Now she's being recognized with a special award as well from a very named after a very well-known and pretty special broadcaster.
Absolutely. You're dead on, Kelly. Lisa's being given the Gordon Sinclair Award for Broadcast Journalism, and this recognizes a Canadian broadcast journalist for their exceptional body of work in broadcast journalism. And she's been at the forefront of the profession for over 30 years, tackling some of the biggest issues of our time and traveling the globe to deliver breaking news to Canadians. And hopefully she finds a gig soon where she gets to do that all over again.
Okay. So great. We've talked here to move on. We've talked on the show before about the excellent CBC comedy, Kim's Convenience. Yeah. So funny. But we also think that it ended far too soon. But one of its stars is receiving, tell me, is it the Radius Award? I don't want to make up another award. Okay, great.
Yep, you got it.
At the CSA. So tell us about it.
Why not? You can never have too many awards, some people would say, Greg.
We're going to have to start a whole another award show just for the secondary awards.
Yeah, it's Simu Liu, who played Chung on Kim's Convenience, and he's being presented with, like you said, the Radius Award. And that salutes a Canadian whose work is making waves globally. And man, did he ever. Simu made history as the star of the first Asian-fronted movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe in Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. A great movie, by the way. And like you said, as we talked about before, he also starred on the CBC comedy series Kim's Convenience for 5 seasons, which went on to win the award for Best Comedy Series at the 2018 Canadian Screen Awards. So just an incredible career that this guy has had. He's just seen his stardom explode worldwide. And so well-deserved of the Radius Award that they're going to be given to him at the Canadian Screen Awards.
Greg, this is all tremendous. Thanks for sharing all this information. So what is the next step in the Canadian Screen Awards process?
So what's happening right now is that the individual categories for acting, writing, directing, best feature film, best comedy, those types of categories, those are all being sorted out right now. Voting for members is happening in the next several weeks. And we've got a couple of folks from AMI that are part of the Academy now. So they're going to be voting in this next round to figure out what the actual the nominated shows, movies, et cetera, are going to be in those categories. And once those key categories are announced, I'll come back on the show and we can break down some of those categories and maybe, fingers crossed, maybe we'll see some AMI TV shows nominated in there too.
What?
Hey, that'd be great.
Yeah. We have been nominated in the past, no?
Yeah.
Oh, yes,
yeah.
For a James Bart. What was the award that you mentioned earlier, Ramya? It was that one.
Yeah, that's right.
The James Baker award.
Get it right.
I thought it was some of her made-up ones. I thought we were going to like corner the market on those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm sure they'd be glad to give us all your made-up ones. Yeah, that goes to AMI. Yeah, take James Baker too while you're at it.
We just need airtime, so we'll take any award. This is awesome, though, Greg. Honestly, like, I love the background on each of the awards and the recipients themselves. So it's nice, and we'll keep posted on more info to come with the Canadian Screen Awards. Thank you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Greg David is our communication specialist. He joins us bi-weekly to talk everything TV, and it's entertaining on the show, but we also talk about entertainment.
Whenever he comes on here and speaks this stuff, I just get such pride, and I don't see a lot of the stuff. I'm very big on Canadian stuff for sure, you know, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend to watch all Canadian shows any more than I watch any, you know, from the UK or the US or wherever. But you sit back and just say, wow, yeah that's some impressive people.
Impressive people, and really just getting to know them through these awards mean you get to keep in touch with the other initiatives and projects that they're involving themselves in, the conversations they're bringing to the table, all that.
And how they're helping make things better. Speaking of making things better, we'll step aside for a moment, and when we return, Bill Shackleton's here with the first edition of The Buzz this week. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we do return after those messages. Of course, we've got a lot more show ahead. Remember, if by chance you miss our show live, catch it on a repeat at 10 p.m. Eastern time. We'll be here on AMI Audio and AMI TV. Catch us when you can via podcast as well. Subscribe to the Kelly and Ramya podcast at your convenience. Well, Ramya, as we settle back here in this part of Ontario with the winds and snow raging outside, what a better way to take great content in and have some discussion. So let's welcome in for The Buzz, as we like to do Wednesdays through Fridays on the program, Mr. Bill Shackleton. We've been doing The Buzz for a number of years over on Kelly and Company. Bring it over here to Kelly and Ramya and the man himself. Good day, sir. Where are we starting?
Is tipping getting out of control? Many consumers say yes from the Associated Press.
Oh, the classic question.
I know, a classic one. Well, anyway, across the country, there's a growing silent frustration brewing about an age-old practice that many say that is getting out of control, out of hand. So basically, it's tipping, and there's a group of people saying, well, you know, I have to now tip everywhere. So where you used to buy your coffee or donut, now they're asking for a tip. And other people are wondering, well, am I going to have to tip my dentist? Am I going to have to tip my doctor? This business is, you know, they're asking up to 30%. And it isn't like a cookie jar that you can ignore.
Is
like,
that right?
Yeah.
30%?
Up to 30. Sheesh. Which is, I mean, I tip 10%. Anyway, it's just... And because of the situation for tipping is that it's electronic. So when they bring the machine over to your table, say, they can see how much you're tipping. So a lot of people feel that they are obligated to tip more because waiters are or servers, as they're called, I guess, can look at how much you're tipping. Mm-hmm. And it's just totally, in my opinion, getting out of, I mean, we all know that the, you know, the COVID-19 situation made a lot of, you know, it, people in the retail industry, it basically went down the tubes. So they're trying
Billy,
to get that
you,
back.
Billy, do you hear that bird? I hear a bird saying cheap. Must be describing your tipping practice.
That's me.
10%. Shaq, how long have you given 10%?
Forever.
Yeah. The times change, Shaq.
Yeah, they have changed.
But let's talk about the premise, though. Like, why do you guys tip? Okay, I tip based on the service. There's no way, and I'm telling you this, hands down, there's no way that I go to a counter, order a thing, and the person hands me the thing I order, and then when it prompts me to tip, that I will tip. I'm not tipping them.
Where do you tip, though?
I will tip at actual services. So, like, the dog groomers or hair salons or where there's a server coming to the table to take my order and take care of me and customer service it out all the way. I will tip for all of that, but I'm not tipping.
Will you tip standing in line? If you have to stand in line to go up to a counter?
No, that's what I'm saying. I'm not tipping for that, but that's a normal practice now. Like, it prompts you to tip at food courts where you're going to buy your food.
Whenever. Yeah. I mean, no matter how bad the service is, you're expected to
tip. Not even how bad or good, but there was no service. Like, it's literally the cashier cashing me out. I'm tipping you.
Billy's point there, Bill, will you tip if it's bad service?
No.
Okay.
I only tip for service. Tip? Okay.
I only tip on the service.
If it's bad service, you won't leave 10%.
No.
No, he leaves 10% regardless, remember?
Yep.
That's his tipping.
Well, he says now, not if it's bad service, no.
Okay, now see, that's my second question, though, there, because I had a follow-up, which was, what is a bad tip? So these days, I'll tell you, the lowest 10%. on most machines, the lowest is 15 now. It's 15, then 18, then 25, or whatever it goes up.
So, Billy, yours is really, bad.
So 10%, the norm, like, socially, 10% is very low. 15 has become the new norm. Now, when I was, like, a teenager for the last 10 years or so, it was 18% was a great tip. Like, that was an above-average tip. 15 was average and 10 was bad, right? Now, 15 is a low tip. 18 is the new average. And I don't know what goes up beyond that because I don't...
It goes up every year. We've read items here that are the etiquette. Every year at the end, they talk about etiquette, you know, where you send gifts to people who do services to you for Christmas or
exactly.
And remember once, a couple of years ago, we had one that discussed tipping. And then you see it when you use Uber Eats or any of them.
Uber Eats, right? Oh, boy.
I haven't even gotten there.
Do you pick your own or do you select one of those?
I usually select. But here's the question about Uber Eats, though. I talked about this recently with a friend. Are you tipping for your courier, like the person who's delivering your food? Are you tipping the... There's so many prompts on Uber Eats to tip. One is for the restaurant, the facility itself. Then there's another one for your delivery. So I'm just getting a little confused as to, are we compensating... Because tips have always been around this question of, you know, people who don't get paid minimum wage, right? Or getting paid very little, we're compensating for their tip. So things are getting more expensive on everybody's part. Are we still doing that? Because, you know, or is
in theory,
if you can't tip, don't go?
Yeah, I think, Billy, you're right. I don't think you are. Because when you tip for the store, in theory, that should be going for who's making your food prep. But we don't know where that's going to go. Just like when you tip, even if someone walks up, gives you your plate at a table, a lot of places that's split between the staff. You take it, you put it in, and everybody, some places, no. And again, I think it depends on how much. And when you use Uber and you tip, I wonder how many people worry about, will this affect how fast I get it, what quality I get my food? If they see my tip is that Billy favorite of, you know, 10%, then are they going to, oh, it fell out of my hand. Oh, I dropped it. Oh, I kicked it down the hallway when I was trying to pick it up. You don't know. And I often wonder how many of us worry about that. And that's what prompts us to tip well, or will they remember your face at the counter if you don't tip at, you know, one of the places you walk up? And here comes the cheapskate again. We'll fix that Kelly guy.
But when you know. Look into it, though, there are many ways that prices are going up. Like Uber Eats is a great example because Uber Eats prices for items are usually higher than if you go and look at a menu in person.
Right.
Right. They've actually marked up the prices on the Uber Eats menu. So there's that compensation. And then there's the several tipping. And then there's all the different surcharges and service fees and everything else that Uber Eats is getting, like their team and not the facility. So I don't know. I do get overwhelmed by the tipping custom these days.
Is it? Let's go back to what Billy said right off the top. Bill, would you ever tip your doctor? I mean, the doctor would probably say, it's money, it's dirty, I don't want it.
30%.
But when you do those other services, you know, do you go to a doctor, feel the need to tip, or your pharmacist, anything?
I never do, and I don't think I ever.
No,
I figure OHIP will do. OHIP will cover that, and, you know, we'll take care of that.
I care
should
dentist.
We,
my dentist would tipping? Laugh at me.
I'm
kind of like from where Bill is. To me, it's to offset the fact people aren't being paid enough for an hourly wage. That's what I've always thought.
Yeah.
I know we talk about minimum wage and things going on, but there's still, and I don't know if a lot of places, drivers bringing me a pizza, is he paid before? They were never paid, but because it was counted on, well, you're getting tips.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. Like, essentially, we're tipping because they're not getting paid enough. So shouldn't they be getting paid enough? And as inflation and all the other things, cost of living gets more and more expensive, we're compensating more and more by tips, but are they getting paid more?
And is that the model for remuneration for the Uber drivers? Is it only what tips, just, you know, like when it comes to delivering food, or is there a fee? I don't know that myself. I've never really thought to look into it until we're running our mouths now about it.
That's the good in the question, right? So, like, I've had great Uber drivers where I have tipped just because they were, you know, extremely pleasant or went out of their way to help me, assist me as a low vision person. But other times, if it's just an average ride, no extra support or anything like that, what would change the intention to tip? Because I paid for the service, right?
Right. But you would tip a taxi driver? No?
Maybe.
I do. Yeah, I do.
I don't know. Taxis aren't even the norm anymore for me, so I actually have no idea.
Yeah, I've never taken a taxi in how many years?
Yeah.
But you used to tip there, Bill.
Huh?
You used to tip taxi drivers, right?
Yeah,
and you tip your Uber driver, Billy?
I tip. I think there's a combo box with 10% for 15% or
there
whatever.
Is, yes.
I want to make one more point about tipping. And some retail places are actually saying, well, they're hiring more people with the expectations that they'll get more tips. I mean, talk about exploitation.
What?
You've got to be kidding me.
Instead of just paying the people fairly so they don't have to rely on tips, we're hiring more people to get more tips?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is such a confusing turn of events, honestly.
Yeah. Well, with the expectation.
And this is where it's gotten, you know, out of hand in the sense of you would think places pay enough, but places are saying the same. Well, I can't, so therefore we're going to do it this way, and you know, eating here, if you can afford to eat here, you can afford the tip here.
Well, yeah, see, and that used to be the bottom line. If you can't afford the tip, then don't go out, right? But
anyway,
that's not even the only question anymore, because now who you tip may not even get the entirety of the tip, because everyone's pooling now.
Well, then you think to get more food. Because of the pooling. Yep.
Yep.
Interesting. Bill, I think we can squeeze one more in.
Yeah, I think we can, too.
This one gives you too many places to go to thinking about it, talking about it. It's like the proverbial rabbit hole. So, let's jump another one in quickly.
Well, there's a school in Massachusetts, actually. It's a funny thing where the lights have remained on since 2021, amazingly enough. So the only way they can turn the lights off is by flipping circuit breakers and unscrewing light bulbs. In Medelog School, in 2021, the Smoke Signal, which is a newspaper, reported that basically there was a computer glitch and they couldn't get parts. basically because the supplier had changed hands, and because of the supply chain, they're hoping that, so the lights have been remained on. I wonder what their electricity bill is.
I mean, that one must be.
What about the, what if it had been the heating?
Oh my goodness.
What if it would have been the air conditioning or the heating that couldn't be turned off? I mean, it's just amazing.
It's amazing to me that the system doesn't use anything but circuit breakers. Like, there was nothing implemented to be able to turn off the lights? That's concerning.
It's all computer, right? So you don't get a part, you don't get a supply, you know.
Right, so you got to do it. The only manual way is I'll just pull this or flip that, and away the lights go and the power. That's just crazy. But again, what do you do? And it's one of those things you stop and think, well, hold on a sec. Just get the part. Well, with everything the way it's been, that's easier said than done, Bill.
Yeah, wow. I know it is.
My mind races to some horrid scenarios, like if there were school shootings or any kind of lockdown situation and you weren't able to turn off the lights.
Yeah.
That's right. Problematic.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. Yeah. And like you said, the bill. All right, Diesel, thanks a lot for being with us today. You're going to truck on out of here and be back in tomorrow?
We are.
Billy's nickname from school, ladies and gentlemen. We'll talk to you tomorrow, sir, when you bring more items for us to discuss. And maybe we'll get through more than two of them tomorrow. But, you know, that's hopeful wishing, the way we get going. Thanks, Bill.
Thanks.
Bill Shackleton, we call it The Buzz. He joins us Wednesday through Fridays right here on Kelly and Rumya. We've got an hour ahead still to go, folks. We're going to chat with Chantal Oakes, president of AEBC BC affiliate, about an exciting job posting for project manager for an emergency preparedness project. And many new jobs are in the gig economy. What does this mean? Kevin Shaw stops by to explain during his entrepreneur segment. But up next, we talk to Krista Couture about the CBC Arts original call, How to Lose Everything. We'll get that streaming started for you Friday, but we'll get information on it next up here on Kelly and Rumya.
Keep it here for more of Kelly and Rumya on AMI TV.
Hi, I'm Stephen Scott. Join me every day for Double Tap. It's a show where we occasionally talk about technology for blind and partially sighted people. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts.